The trial of the century is coming. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 57, volume number 3, The Consequences Will Reverberate Far Beyond the Jury Box Inside Today's Daily Journal. Essay: The trial of the century is coming. Google goes to defense. White House draws industry into battle. Cotter's one-month warning. Chart of the day. Ian's today's mailbag. Editor's note: Porter turned over the journal to Tech Frontiers editor Erez Kalir today so Erez could tell the story of the legal battle between Elon Musk and AI giant OpenAI, what he calls the trial of the century. Here's Erez: Behind every great fortune lies a great crime. Later this month, in a sleepy federal courthouse in Oakland, California, a 12-person jury will decide whether Honoré de Balzac's 19th-century maxim applies to one of the great fortunes underlying the artificial intelligence, AI, boom. The fortune in question belongs to OpenAI, the maker of the leading generative AI platform ChatGPT, a company now reportedly seeking a staggering $850 billion valuation in a planned initial public offering, IPO. Elon Musk, founder of Tesla, TSLA, and SpaceX, and one of OpenAI's original founders, has asserted in a detailed lawsuit that the OpenAI fortune was built on fraud, and a widely respected federal judge overseeing the case has already ruled that Musk's claims are credible enough to merit a trial. What the jury will decide is not merely whether Elon Musk has a sound grievance. It's whether OpenAI can continue to exist in its present form, and indeed whether the entire AI ecosystem surrounding OpenAI, an ecosystem that encompasses some of the largest, most powerful corporations on Earth, including NVIDIA, NVDA, Microsoft, MSFT, Oracle, ORCL, and others, rests on a rotten, fraudulent foundation. Let me explain. OpenAI's idealistic beginnings. OpenAI did not begin as a conventional Silicon Valley company. It launched in 2015 as a non-profit, explicitly dedicated to developing artificial intelligence for the benefit of humanity, unconstrained by the pursuit of profit. That framing mattered. It attracted leading AI talent, proven technology builders. And it also attracted Elon Musk, who contributed tens of millions of dollars in seed capital and lent his credibility to the venture. The idea was both idealistic and elegant: build the most powerful technology the world has ever seen, but do so in a structure designed to prevent its capture by private interests. Then, as OpenAI's tech approached commercial viability, the structure changed. First came a hybrid, capped profit model, a kind of halfway house between a non-profit and for-profit. Then came a web of affiliated entities. Then deep commercial ties with Microsoft. Then, in a short span, the non-profit became the launchpad for one of the most meteorically valuable private companies in history. Musk's claim is straightforward. He alleges that he deliberately backed a non-profit mission, one grounded in openness, safety, and public benefit, only to see that mission, and the valuable intellectual property that it spawned, get permuted into a for-profit enterprise without his consent. You don't have to like Elon Musk or approve of the carnival show antics in some other parts of his life to recognize that this is not a trivial allegation. And more importantly, the court has already said as much. OpenAI, represented by some of the leading law firms in America, sought to have the case dismissed before trial. U.S. District Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers, an experienced, respected jurist overseeing the case, declined OpenAI's motion. In doing so, she determined that Musk's claims, which include fraud, breach of fiduciary duty, and unjust enrichment, present genuine disputes of material fact that only a jury can resolve. In plain English, Musk could win. What's at stake for OpenAI? The headline damages number that Musk has sought, over $150 billion, is sizable enough to give anyone pause. But the real danger for OpenAI isn't whether it must pay damages. It's how the court characterizes those damages, and what else the court might decide. Here why: Musk is not simply asking for compensation. He is seeking what lawyers call equitable remedies, injunctions, governance changes, and, most importantly, disgorgement. Disgorgement is an entirely different animal from ordinary damages. It doesn't ask what the plaintiff lost, but instead what the defendant gained. Here, if the jury finds that OpenAI's transformation violated its original non-profit commitments, the question may well not be how much Musk's original donations were worth, but instead how much of OpenAI's current value was built on top of that alleged misconduct. That's why the numbers Musk's complaint reference, over $150 billion, are not laughable. And Musk has recently sharpened his point even further. Just last week, His legal team amended his requested remedies so that any monetary recovery would go not to Musk personally, but to OpenAI's charitable arm. At the same time, he reiterated his intention to seek post-trial equitable relief aimed at restoring the nonprofit's role in governance. The shift in strategy is brilliant and profound. In effect, Musk is saying to the court and the jury, "I'm not in this for a payday. Don't believe me? I'm prepared to pledge any recovery in a legally binding way to OpenAI's original nonprofit arm." By stripping away any direct financial benefit he could gain from winning the suit, Musk reframes the story as something more fundamental. Whether a charitable mission was warped by greed and used to build a private fortune, that's a question juries tend to take seriously. The deeper stakes, confidence and trust. But for OpenAI, the Musk trial also implicates something much deeper. If the jury rules decisively against OpenAI, particularly if it finds fraud or orders meaningful equitable relief, it would not simply impose a potentially staggering financial cost. It would also shatter trust in OpenAI's integrity as a businessman and replace it with massive doubt. Doubt about governance, doubt about ownership, doubt about whether the company's structure will survive intact. This kind of doubt is toxic to capital formation. Truly, it's kryptonite. IPOs depend on belief, clarity, and confidence, belief in a company's story, clarity about the company's plans, and confidence that the business is durable. An adverse jury verdict shatters all of these. At best, it materially delays an IPO. At worst, it forces a major restructuring. But even that's not the whole story. The rest of the AI ecosystem, OpenAI, does not exist in isolation. It sits at the center of a tightly coupled ecosystem, one that includes Microsoft, Nvidia, Oracle, as well as a vast network of investors who have collectively committed hundreds of billions of dollars to the AI buildout. Microsoft, specifically, is deeply entangled with OpenAI's fate. The software giant's exposure is not limited to its equity stake. OpenAI is one of the most important customers for Microsoft's cloud service Azure. It's a major driver of GPU demand, cloud usage, and the AI-related backlog Microsoft has highlighted to investors. If OpenAI were materially impaired, Microsoft would not simply take an equity write-down, nor even simply lose revenue. Instead, the AI growth narrative that Microsoft has spun to justify hundreds of billions in sunk capex would itself come under withering scrutiny. The risk for Microsoft is that an adverse verdict in the OpenAI case breaks the story. A man goes broke gradually. Then suddenly, a couple of weeks ago, writing about the Iran war and the petrodollar, I quoted Ernest Hemingway's justifiably famous line about the man who goes broke gradually, then suddenly. I was writing at the time about the fate of the dollar, a topic to which I'll return in another Daily Journal soon. But the quote may apply equally powerfully to the market's AI boom. History is full of moments like this, when systems that have appeared stable are revealed to rest on interlocking assumptions, assumptions about trust, governance, and incentives that have really not been tested until they are tested all at once. The AI boom today rests on such assumptions, that capital will continue to flow, that governance structures are sound, that the stories companies tell about themselves aren't fraudulent. In a few weeks, in a sleepy courtroom in Oakland, those assumptions will be put on trial. If they crack, the consequences will reverberate far beyond OpenAI. Tell us what you think. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. Eras Kalir, Berkeley, California. Three things to know before we go. 1. Google's Gemini is coming to the Pentagon's classified cloud. Alphabet, Google, is reportedly in substantive talks with the Department of Defense, DOD, to deploy its Gemini AI platform in classified military environments. Google has proposed contract language barring the use of its AI for domestic mass surveillance and for autonomous weapons targeting without human oversight, terms that mirror those OpenAI secured earlier this year. The talks extend a relationship that already runs deep. Gemini has been accessible to 1.2 million DoD employees through the GenAI.mil portal since December, processing 40 million prompts, and Google rolled out 8 pre-built Gemini agents across the Pentagon's 3 million-strong workforce in March. With Anthropic and its Claude AI platform blacklisted as a supply chain risk, Google is quietly positioning itself as the Pentagon's AI partner of choice. 2. The White House is putting American industry on a wartime footing. This morning, The Wall Street Journal reported that senior Pentagon officials have held talks with Ford, FCEO Jim Farley, and General Motors, GM, CEO Mary Barra about producing weapons and military supplies, the first such ask since World War II. Meanwhile, the administration has reportedly invited the CEOs of major U.S. oil and gas companies to a call this afternoon to press them to ramp up drilling in the U.S., as gasoline tops $4 a gallon on higher oil prices. The latter is good news for our complete investor oil and gas recommendations, particularly royalty firms like Texas Pacific Land, TPL, which collects royalties and water fees across the Permian Basin. 3. Qatar's one-month warning. Full-fledged economic impact is coming in 1 or 2 months. As a result of this war, says Qatar's finance minister to an International Monetary Fund audience in D.C. beyond rising gas and diesel prices and diminishing supplies of jet fuel, disruptions to helium and fertilizer exports are already threatening the tech and food sectors. Additionally, damage to his nation's Ras Laffan facility has knocked out 20% of global LNG capacity, with recovery expected to take 5 years. The resulting impact on global energy, technology, and agriculture is imminent and severe. Chart of the day. Ionq soars on DARPA win and NVIDIA quantum push. Shares of Ionq, IONQ, surged 55% this week after the quantum computing company won a contract to develop advanced systems for the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. NVIDIA, NVDA, also unveiled its easing AI model, which it says can correct quantum computing errors up to 3x faster than traditional approaches, adding fuel to the fire. Mailbag in Wednesday's Daily Journal, Porter wrote the essay "It Wasn't Exceptionalism, It Was Capitalism, and It's Over," explaining the decline of New York City. Readers share their thoughts below. New York Kevin L. writes, "Porter, great piece on New York. We are trying to get our daughter to leave the Upper East Side and join us here in Naples, Florida. I was curious as to why you chose Winter Park over a place like Naples, or other coastal towns. I assume that it's reasonably close to where you grew up, if I recall past mention of Central Florida experiences." Porter comment, "Winter Park is a unique place in America. It was set up as a planned community by wealthy English investors in the 1880s, and became a winter haven for wealthy New Englanders, who came to Winter Park on the train, much like other railroad towns in the South, like Aiken, South Carolina, and Palm Beach. Good local government and great zoning laws have retained its charm. Big lots, huge oak trees, brick streets, a wonderful downtown strip with a central park and golf course. It's a small community, probably about 500 families, that's seen Orlando grow all around it. You get a small, luxury community. With good weather, a great airport, nothing against Naples, but Orlando is a much bigger economy with more family attractions." Porter, your post about NYC. Bruce K. writes, "It is sad, but everything you said is true. New York City is going down the tubes. As a retired NYPD police officer and investigator, I have seen the changes coming over a long period of time. Also, as a fraud investigator for Medicare, Medicaid, and welfare, both before NYPD and after I retired, I can categorically say the amount of fraud is rampant by so many people, including city government officials and employees. Yes, the amount of money paid for new and old infrastructure is staggering because there is no oversight on how many people do less work than they should be. Just look at how roadwork crews do their jobs. There may be, for argument's sake, 15 workers doing repairs, but the truth is that most of these workers do not do much. It is just the tip of the iceberg. The judges and judicial system are in shambles, with more concern for criminals than law-abiding citizens. When we had the 3 strikes and you're out, meaning automatic jail time, it made a huge difference in the crime rate. The elimination of stop and frisk was a huge mistake. And now with the way police officers are treated, it's no wonder many are leaving. Criminals seem to feel emboldened due to the swinging door policy. The city needs to enforce the proper laws to protect its inhabitants." Florida David L. writes, "Porter, I became a resident in Boca Raton, Florida, this year after fleeing Chicago, Illinois. The same thing is happening in Chicago, just a smaller population. Our kids are out of the nest, so we stay in Florida 6 months and a day and the rest traveling. Between no state income tax and no estate tax in Florida, it was a no-brainer to leave Illinois. My problem is I can't move the investment real estate out of Illinois unless I do 1,031 exchanges, but I'm still stuck with Illinois LLCs. NYC is a cautionary tale." Sarah M. writes, "Mr. Stansberry, wear sunscreen. I'll be leaving Rochester and moving to Tennessee myself. I heard about this 86-year-old man who hybridizes azaleas and rhododendrons. He doesn't sell them, but it sure would be fun to pick up some advanced propagation skills. Yes, NYC is a cautionary tale. I always learn something from you. Thank you. Maybe a benevolent dictatorship is more effective." Jade L. writes, "Today's Daily Journal is an eye-opener. Statistics of New York City show a disaster. Maybe a benevolent dictatorship is more effective, since democracy certainly is abused to the extreme. Any hard-working person will see that your sole effort is not enough and choose to leave. Please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may, or may not, be above the current buy-up to price. To learn more, visit the current recommendations page of the relevant service, here. To gain access or to learn more about our current recommendations, call our customer care team at 888-610-8000. 1-888-346-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.